This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
My line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Force has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello, and welcome to Open Eyes. Another very, very freaking cold edition of Open Eyes. Man, I'm telling you, I think that we're starting to get into an ice age here. I kid you not. I joke about it, but man, it's been cold enough around here lately to start to wonder. Anyways, today is Friday, February 20th of 2015. Before I go any further tonight, I have to, I guess, make a real quick statement, announcement, whatever it is that you want to say. 24 years ago today, my life changed radically. Something ended up happening that made me think of life in a much different way and essentially opened my eyes to the way that things can, well, radically alter in a heartbeat. On this day, 24 years ago, my oldest daughter, Bethany, was born. Happy birthday, Bethany. I love you, and I'm so glad that you've become my biggest fan of my show. I will tell you, before finding out that she was on the way, my life was going through extensive turmoil. I was going through a lot of, well, horrible stuff during those years, during that time period. And there's really nothing like having a child enter your life to make things look drastically different. For better or worse, whatever it may be, it really can change things real quick. So I wanted to make sure to get that out of the way right away, because I'm glad that Bethy is my number one fan, and I'm sure that my other daughter, Crystal, will argue against that. But thank you, Bethany, for coming into my life and changing my life. And I do this show for the betterment of you and your generation and all of the future generations that are out there. I do what I do to try to open people's minds, open people's hearts, and open people's eyes to the things that are going on around us. And it's for them. It's for them that I do it. So, hello everyone, and welcome to this what may prove to be a very sappy episode of Open Eyes. Today, I'm going to talk to you guys about the culture of love, and I kind of refer to it as the cult year of love. You know, a lot of people have this idea of love, and they push it forward kind of as an agenda. And I want to talk about that as well as what is actual true love and all of that kind of good stuff. So hopefully you guys are ready to open your hearts a little bit and maybe learn something new about the way that love works and the things that go on. Before I get to the love topics, though, I do have some news that I want to bring you guys. Some of these things I don't know if you've heard about yet or not. I'm sure that at least one of them you have, but the first one that I had bring to my attention is the idea that massive clouds erupted 260 kilometers into the Martian atmosphere, and no one knows why. This is from a science website, you know, a website that's dedicated to scientific agendas and scientific outlooks. And here's what they had to say. Enormous cloud-like plumes reaching 260 kilometers above the surface of Mars have left scientists baffled. This is way beyond Mars's normal weather, reaching into the exosphere where the atmosphere merges with the interplanetary space. None of the conventional explanations for such clouds make sense. Neither water or carbon dioxide ice, nor dust storms or auroral light emissions usually hit such heights. Continued observations showed that they disappeared during the Martian daytime, were not visible in the evening, and reappeared each morning for at least 10 consecutive days. High-altitude clouds are not the only Martian mysteries keeping researchers on their toes. One question driving the exploration of the Red Planet is whether there has ever been life on Mars. Latest results by NASA's Curiosity rover reaffirm that the planet provided habitable conditions in the past. Water is the most important prerequisite for life. One explanation for the ongoing formation of gullies and related features, for example, is liquid water at or near the Martian surface, even during the currently prevailing extreme dry and cold conditions. And while there are many possible explanations for the enigmatic whiffs of methane observed on Mars, one of the most exciting is the production by microorganisms living just below the surface. Part of the fascination of Mars exploration is that it is very much about understanding our own origins and future. As the example of the mystery cloud observations shows, everybody has a chance to participate in unraveling the Red Planet's mysteries. Well, everybody except those who want to put forward ideas that are outside of the normally accepted realms, that is. How many people have tried to come forward and say over the years, there has been life on Mars, there still may be life on Mars, there's the pyramids on Mars and the faces on Mars and so on and so forth. Look, guys, Mars, I fully believe that Mars at one point in time had an extensive ecosystem, just like here on planet Earth, and that something occurred in the past that caused that ecosystem to collapse, whether it was something that they did themselves, if there was a sentient species on that planet, which I do believe that there was. I mean, there's a lot of evidence out there that shows that, yes, there was some sort of civilization there on the planet Mars at some distant point in the past. There may have been some kind of natural causes that happened, or as one scientist has put forward, that the idea that there was some kind of nuclear holocaust that took place there, that there's evidence that shows that. And it may very well be that the people that we have here on planet Earth now were once there and just migrated to here. It's a very big possibility, and one that I definitely do not discount the possibility of. In fact, I think that that is a very likely scenario as to what happened there as well as here. We don't know for sure, of course, but, well, there may be some that do, but those of us in the general population, we don't have that kind of information on hand. But regardless, it does show that there are still things that are happening on Mars that they cannot explain. They try to explain it, but they come very short of being able to do it. And what does that mean for us here as well? You know, like if there's something that's occurring there, for instance, all of the papers and everything that has come out to show that the polar ice caps, for instance, are melting there, that there is increasing emissions of methane into the atmosphere and so on and so forth. All of these changes are happening there at the same time that changes are happening here on our planet. And they still try to point the whole global warming thing and blaming it on the carbon emissions and all of that stuff when we have another planet that's just right next door on the galactic scale of things here going through changes at the exact same time and a very similar changes as a matter of fact. And I don't see any SUVs over there, and I don't see cows farting over there. I mean, it's you know, scientists, they come to this conclusion of things and they say this is it and that's all and there's nothing else, when in fact there is so much more going on than they ever want to admit to. So I thought that was an interesting story. I had to bring that one to you guys. 260 kilometers up into the atmosphere is where these things were seen. That's a real high. That's a real high set of clouds right there. So, an Oklahoma legislative committee overwhelmingly voted to ban advanced placement United States history classes, persuaded by the argument that it only teaches students what is bad about America. Other lawmakers are seeking a court ruling that would effectively prohibit the teaching of all AP courses in public schools. Oklahoma Representative Dan Fisher, a Republican, has introduced emergency legislation prohibiting the expenditure of funds on the Advanced Placement United States History course. Fisher is part of a group called the Black Robe Regiment, which argues the church and God himself has been under assault, marginalized, and diminished by the progressives and secularists. The group attacks the false wall of separation of church and state. The Black Robe Regiment claims that a growing tide of special interest groups indoctrinating our youth at the exclusion of Christian perspective. Fisher said the Advanced Placement history class fails to teach American exceptionalism. The bill passed the Oklahoma State House Education Committee on Monday on a vote of 11 to 4. That's 11 people who are absolute idiots. They are absolute idiots. I'm going to bite no bones about it. The fact is that we are suffering a lot of things right now because people do not understand history. They do not understand history or its drive and its cycle. They don't understand how history very much repeats itself when people do not pay attention to it. You look at America right now, for instance, as a nation, and we're going through exactly what happened during Nazi Germany, the exact steps, one after another. It's like they're following a game plan, and they very well may be. It's actually my belief that they are. But regardless, this is history that's repeating. right? This has happened so many times throughout all of human history that we know of, that when people ignore what has happened before, it happens again. And that includes all of the horrific stuff that goes on. It happens. So this person putting this kind of thing out there to say that teaching students the bad things about America is a bad idea is so far beyond what should be considered to be acceptable. Because you have to look at the negatives as well as the goods. Yes, America has done a lot of good things. I will be the first one to say that. But America has also been responsible for a lot of very, very bad things as well. And this is ongoing. It doesn't stop. The reason why it doesn't stop is because people don't pay attention to it. So a school system, a place that is supposed to be educating students, right? A school system is saying, no, we cannot teach them this history. They are literally rewriting history. And they're definitely doing it with the whole Common Core thing. And I'm sure that this is actually a part of that agenda, even though it is under the auspices of a conservative Christian right-wing kind of bent. It's definitely still falling into the Common Core ideal one way or the other. And as far as teaching American exceptionalism, there are things that, yes, America can be considered to be exceptional with. We're exceptional with the fact that we spend more money on defense than the next five countries combined. That's exceptional. We have exceptionalism in the fact that we have more prisoners per capita than any other country in the world. That's exceptional. Yeah, I mean, we have a country full of aggressively ignorant cowards who are all about mass consumerism and just taking. We have that as an exceptionalism. I don't know, this type of legislation, it doesn't surprise me at all, especially from a state that is of the more conservative type of leaning. It doesn't surprise me. It disappoints me, though. It really does. It just shows that this stuff is just going to keep on going on, and that people are not standing up against it. People are still totally asleep, still totally accepting everything that they're being told with it all. And it's just it disappoints me. It really does. I mean, I guess my biggest thing with this bill is that once again, we have religion mandating what goes on in places that religion should have no place. I mean, religion has no business being in public schools. It doesn't. People have different religions. We live in a country that people can be any religion that they want to be. By forcing the issue with one religion or another is a big problem. And it's always been a big problem. So the fact that this actually went through and passed in a public school type of a situation, again, it makes me shake my head. It really does. But again, I mean, how many times have I said before that the educational system is not there to educate? It's there to indoctrinate. And this is just one more brick in that wall. This is just one more bit of proof that that's exactly how it goes. It's about indoctrinating. It's about indoctrinating students into, oh, America is only good, and ignore anything that's bad that's ever gone on. What about the genocide that that America was responsible for when it came to the Native Americans? What about the slavery that it was responsible for? What about on and on and on? All of these things have to be taught, because if you don't, then we're going to go through it again. And who are going to be the next victims? Who are going to be the next ones in line to fall under American exceptionalism? I mean, I love my country. Don't get me wrong. I love my country, but I don't like what it's turning into, and I don't like where it's heading. And I'm trying to get the train to stop, or at least slow down a little bit, so that my freaking kids can have a chance. And this certainly doesn't help that. Okay, so in another a sort of related topic, because this is again going into the indoctrination culture that we have. Officials declare eating healthy is a mental disorder. That's the headline. In an attempt to curb the mass rush for food change and reform, psychiatry has green-lighted a public relations push to spread awareness about their new buzzword, orthorexia nervosa, defined as a pathological obsession for biologically pure and healthy nutrition. In other words, experts are saying that our demand for nutrient-dense, healthful food is a mental disorder that must be treated. So CNN, Fast Company, Popular Science, other media outlets have all begun to talk about this new disorder that they're putting forward, orthorexia nervosa. It's, again, it's fueled by a desire for clean or healthy foods. Those diagnosed with the condition are overly preoccupied with the nutritional makeup of what they eat. Now, I'll grant you, I'm not the most healthy of eaters out there. I really am not. I wish I was, but I'm doing what I can to improve that. But that doesn't mean that I have a mental disorder. The fact that I look on a label to see if something has high fructose corn syrup in it doesn't make me have a mental disorder. I know and understand the effects that that kind of product can have. The fact that I look at a label and look for monosodium glutamate does not make me have a mental disorder. It means that I don't want to have a bunch of fakeness and artificialness in there to make me feel hungry even when I'm full, you see. Along with all the other side effects that eating MSG can have on you. I don't have a mental disorder just because I feel like eating some fruit instead of a Twinkie. Okay. I mean, where exactly are they trying to go with this? Well, they're trying to make it so that this is a new label that they're going to put on people who are trying to fight against GMO labeling, for instance. You stand up against GMO foods, well, you must have a mental disorder. Your mental disorder is orthorexia nervosa. Here, we have a pill for that. By the way, it might make you bleed from your butt, but that's okay, because we have another pill for that to help you take care of that. A mental disorder for eating healthy. When is this crap gonna stop, guys? When is this bullshit gonna end? When are we gonna actually stand up and say, you know what, you people are freaks and you need to get the hell out? When are people gonna actually stand up? When are people actually going to start talking and sharing this stuff? I just don't get it. I just don't get how people can just sit there with closed eyes and see stuff like this and go, oh yeah, well, that's normal. That's okay, because the officials said that. The guys in the white lab coats, they said that that's how it's supposed to be, so that's how it is. We believe them. We have to believe them, because if we don't, then we're going to have this other mental disorder over here. All right. So, speaking of scientists and doing strange things, it's long been known that smoking pot gives people the munchies, but what about the marijuana causes this uncontrollable urge to consume mass quantities of junk food? That's what a team of researchers from Yale University wanted to find out in a recently published study. Yale neurobiology professor Thomas Horvath and his colleagues got dozens of laboratory mice high on cannabis in an attempt to find out. A quote from him: "Everyone knows that if you smoke dope after Thanksgiving dinner, you're going to still go back and eat more, sometimes much more. We were interested to find out why." You know, I've always wondered that too. Why does smoking pot or anything along those lines end up giving you the munchies? Horvath's team monitored the brain circuitry responsible for promoting eating by manipulating parts of the cellular pathway that governs marijuana's action on the brain. They discovered that the munchies are actually caused by neurons typically responsible for suppressing appetite. By observing how the appetite center of the brain responds to marijuana, they were able to see that what drives the hunger brought about by cannabis and how that same mechanism that normally turns off feeding becomes actually a driver of eating. It's like, and this is another quote from him, "It's like pressing a car's brakes and accelerating instead. We were surprised to find that the neurons that we thought were responsible for shutting down eating were suddenly being activated and promoting hunger, even when you are full. It fools the brain's central feeding system." So apparently what ends up happening is that it actually forces your brain to consider itself being hungry. And for whatever reason, people go to the junk food. I think mostly it's the junk food thing because people, it's like real quick to prepare. It's real quick to grab. And so you just grab that nearest bag of chips and eat away at it. I thought that was interesting though, because I have always actually wondered why that ends up occurring. And well, lo and behold, there you go. Now you know. I know that a lot of my listeners out there are actually users of cannabis. A lot of you guys do it for health reasons, and some of you also do it for recreational reasons. So now you know. Now you know why you get the munchies if you smoke pot or eat it or anything along those lines. Now you know. I thought that was pretty cool. So on a related note, chocolate bar giant Nestle has agreed to remove all artificial dyes from its candies by the end of 2015, a move that many parents stand behind for their children's health and well-being. The Center for Science in the Public Interest, a dietitian and physician-run advocacy group, is now asking Nestle's biggest competitor, Mars, to also stop using food dyes in M&Ms and the rest of its popular candy lines. Food dyes have been on the forefront of controversy for decades, causing parents to squint at the back of apple juice containers and cereal boxes. Manufacturers claim artificial additives enhance the food's flavor, appearance, texture, and shelf life. The appeal is to draw you into the product's taste, touch, smell, and feel in order to keep you hooked on the chemically altered food item. So I thought that was an interesting story because the fact is that, yes, dyes can have a large impact on people. It's not everybody. It's not everybody that the dyes have this impact upon. A lot of people say that, you know, when you consume foods that have certain dyes, like red dye number 5 and all that kind of stuff, that you tend to act hyperactive and all of that stuff. And that does happen. I've seen it, okay? But it doesn't happen to everybody, and it's not every child that's impacted by it. That being said, it's still not something that's good to put out there. I understand their reasoning for it. If it makes the food look more appealing, then people are going to buy it and consume it, and so they're going to do whatever they can to increase their profit margin, of course. But I definitely think that if a food product does not contain enough nutrition or enough of a a reality to it, that it needs to have these things added to it in order to compensate for it, then it's probably not the best product for you to begin with, right? I mean, that's my thought. If you have to do this dressing up of it to make it look more appealing in order for people to be even interested in the product and not throw it away because it looks like crap, then that may actually be part of the problem there. You know, you should start from scratch and from ground up make it appealing just because it's a good product. But no, they have to use these artificial means to do it, and it's sad. But yeah, so finally they are going to, apparently, at least they claim, be removing these artificial dyes. Now my question is, what are they going to use to replace them? Because they're still going to have to make a profit. And unfortunately, these artificial things are much cheaper to make and manufacture than actually using proper things, right? So it makes me wonder exactly what it is that they're going to be replacing it with. And it may actually be a lot more scary and bad for you than just this different artificial dyes, which are already not at all good for you. So guys, I'm going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about love. Love. I love love. So guys, stick around with us. We will be back after these messages. Ben Franklin said, "If you do the same thing tomorrow as you did today, you're going to get the same tomorrow as you got today." Changing the world starts with you, and changing you starts with changing the way you think. Late Night in the Midlands can help. Listen to all of our shows at latenightinthemidlands.com, because things really do need to change. Open Eyes seeks out the heart of matters, looking for explanations in places that most other radio hosts refuse to go. No subject is forbidden, and nothing remains hidden. Listen to Open Eyes on the Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network, weekdays from 7 to 9 p.m. Open minds, open hearts, open eyes.
They went into the homes now, the powers that be, and told us that you cannot discipline your children anymore, and if you discipline your children, you are going to jail. Then they went into the public schools and took discipline out of there. So when we acted up in there, they put our boys into something called special ed classes. And as you know, those special ed classes are nothing but holding cells until they can go to the state prison. If we can have them convicted for a felony, then once they get out of prison, they cannot get a job. Because of that. And then if they happen to eke out and find a job, then they have to pay taxes on a job, yet they cannot vote. I call that taxation without representation. They did a grand thing when they took that discipline away from us, because when they made our parents afraid to discipline the children, then what happened? We found out that the teachers were afraid of the principals were scared of the superintendents, superintendent was scared of the school board was scared of the parents, parents were scared of the children, and the children ain't scared of nobody.
The Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network is deeply devoted to you, the listener. We feel it is necessary to bring you all of the information that you can use in your life. Each and every day, you will find something to listen to here. And whether you come away from the shows informed, inspired, or entertained, it is our passion. We don't bow to corporations, and we don't have handlers to tell us what not to talk about. We bring you everything. Late Night in the Midlands, however, is fully listener-supported. We need your help to stay on the air and to make sure that we get the bills paid. We need your help to keep the truth alive. If you feel that you have gotten anything out of Late Night in the Midlands, we would appreciate your support. You can become a subscriber and help us out on a monthly basis, or if you'd like, a one-time donation is fully appreciated as well. Every year, the average household in America spends over $3,000 on entertainment alone. If you could help us with just a tiny fraction of that amount, you would make all of the difference. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Thank you, and as always, keep yourself informed. Once upon a time, there was a nation which was strong and true. It started out in a grassroots sort of way, with people opening their minds to the thought that things could be done differently than they had been done before, that people could have enough common sense to be able to know whether they were capable of doing something and doing it right. They would put forth effort into building up their communities, working together, talking to each other about the events of the day, and each person's opinion was heard and respected. It held up ideals like equality, free trade, and the thought that each person could make of themselves whatever they wanted to be if they put their minds and their hearts into it. There were many that came along that thought what this nation had done, what this nation had built up for itself and its people, was a bad idea. "These people are not in our control," they said, as they counted their stacks of stolen gold and filthy lucre. So these dark ones, these snakes without faces, tried to sneak into the nation, tried to poison it from within, a snake creeping upon a hare. But this nation, this hare, was too tricky for that. It saw these snakes without faces for what they really were, and banished them from the kingdom. But the snakes learned new tricks as well, and before long, tried again, this time being more sneaky, this time wearing disguises that made them look like the rest of the people. And soon enough, the people were fooled. They were bitten and poisoned from within. The rot did not show at first. That took some time. It was slow, a simmer, a small bit of the life spark that the nation had winking out bit by bit. It was not enough for the nation to notice, really, though some on the fringe tried to tell the others that it was there. No one believed them, though, and the rot continued on, bit by bit, one small spark at a time. A freedom here, a right there, a toleration of horrific things disguised by political correctness. All of these things combined to make the nation a little less than it was before, one day at a time. It soon came to pass that the nation, once a shining place with people that understood right from wrong, became a horribly disfigured version of itself. People walking the streets in ignorance of the suffering around them now was the watchword, when, not long before, would have been a call to action to solve as a community problem. Men became vile, laughing while pouncing on the weak and destroying any sense of humanity that they once held so dear. Women disfigured themselves for the sake of a magazine cover and thinking that what was wrong was right in a bid to become the next selfie star. People begged for more drugs, more pills, more of the creeping death to be injected into their systems as they listened to those in charge telling them the lies that they wanted to hear. The rot began to finally show on the outside. It wasn't long then before the other nations around saw what was happening and decided that now was the time to start dividing up the land for their own purposes. And those snakes without faces counted their gold and their filthy lucre, and threw what they had gained from the death of the nation into the pile of all the other nations that they had destroyed before, and looked around, waiting for the next one to come.
We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Open Eyes. Thank you so much for holding on through that break. I really appreciate it. That little thing that you heard in there, the snakes without faces bit, I was inspired to write that a few days ago after seeing a few things on the internet, and I thought that I would put a little bit of that to music and see what you guys thought. I have a real deep belief that we have been co-opted, taken over, whatever it is that you want to call it, by these outside forces, these snakes without faces. They have really been pushing hard all of the agendas that they want to push forward that are holding people down and holding people back, making people think that what's wrong is right and what's right is wrong, and turning everything upside down, making it so that the educational system no longer educates, it indoctrinates. The justice system is no longer just. It is there for the corporations to be able to get a little bit more money. The lawmakers are no longer trying to make laws that are for the people and by the people and for our protection. They are there as corporate prostitutes to give their cronies more and more money and more resources that belong to us, that are our legacy, that are our things that we're handing down to our children to give them a peace of mind and a bit of sanity to say, hey, this is your place in the world. Make of it what you will. But they have ripped those things away from us. They have drained everything away from us. And now they've got it all propped up in this fakery, this fiat that is going on, this complete and total mockery of what is the right way to be. And it just keeps going on. How much longer are we going to put up with it, guys? How much longer are we going to actually sit here and let them pound us into the ground over and over again? Are you going to end up standing up, or are you just going to still sit there? That's the big question. It's all about the propaganda that's going on. It's all about the agenda that they're pushing to make us what they want us to be, to make us more and more their willing slaves. And that's it. That's all we are to them. We are the great unwashed masses, and we're just here for their pleasure and to serve them. And it's been that way for a really long time now. I think people are starting to wake up. I know that you guys out there, the ones that are listening to my show, I can say with at least some certainty that you guys are awake to a lot of these issues that I talk about. You may not know the exact facts, but you at least know and acknowledge that something wrong is going on. Unless you're a troll. In which case, you're probably just here just to collect information and move on, toss it to your masters, and they can make of it what they will. And that's okay, too. Maybe in the process, your eyes will be opened as well. I don't know. So speaking about all of the agendas that are going on, I do want to talk to you guys about the topic of love and the cult of love and the culture of love. And tying in with that is actually something that's going on very recently that I want to be sure to talk about, especially in this episode, given the topic that's at hand. That topic is 50 Shades of Grey. Now, before you turn this off and say, he's getting ridiculous now, bear with me for a few minutes, because there is a lot of propaganda and a lot of an agenda that's going on as far as this whole 50 Shades of Grey thing is going on. And, you know, you might be getting a little bit tired of hearing about it at this point. I don't know. I know a lot of people are getting tired of talking about the whole ISIS thing and all of that, but you know, the 50 Shades thing, it's pretty recent. So the problem with the whole 50 Shades thing is, again, boiling down to an agenda, and it's a very big propaganda piece. I ran across an article that I wanted to read to you guys, a little bit of it here, just so that you guys have an understanding of kind of where I'm going to be basing this from. 50 Shades of Grey sizzled at the weekend box office, setting new records for the highest grossing President's Day holiday opener of all time and ranking among the biggest R-rated debuts in history. The erotic drama performed like a comic book movie, albeit one with much naughtier costumes, picking up $81.7 million from 3,646 locations over a three-day period. That easily trumped the holiday's previous record holder, the 2010 debut of the romantic comedy Valentine's Day, which kicked off with $56.3 million. A quote here, "It had that whole sex thing going for it. It was edgy, and it started a conversation," said Paul Durgarabedian, senior box office analyst at Rentrak. "It went beyond being a girls' night out movie and became a date night movie." Okay, so listen, guys. The 50 Shades of Grey thing, the whole thing is sick. It really is. And I know that you guys, especially those of you who are maybe of a more religious bent and that sort of thing, would say, well, duh. But let me give you my viewpoint on it and my take on it, and maybe you guys will see why I say it, because I'm not religious, right? So why do I care? Well, now this part is just my humble opinion, again, but I have no issue with what people do in their bedrooms. I mean, let me get that clear to begin with. I really do not have a problem with whatever people want to do in their bedrooms. That's their business. You know, what you do is your biz, and I don't want any involvement in it in any way, shape, and form. I don't want to say yes or no, you're allowed to do this or you're not allowed to do this. It's not my concern. It's not my business. Okay. However, there is a big difference between the whole bondage, sadomasochism scene, the S&M scene, and this 50 Shades of bullcrap stuff. In real S&M situations, the acts that go on are consensual between both parties. And there is always a sense of security with it, because you can say stop at any time and it will stop. It's your choice, you see. It's your consenting choice to be subjected to that kind of sexual expression. It's your business, okay? And it's not my place to say whether or not somebody should or shouldn't do anything like this. The problem is that as far as this 50 Shades of Grey business is concerned, in the situation that's presented by it, it's not consensual. When it comes down to it, the whole 50 Shades of Grey stuff is, well, violent rape when it comes down to it. That's what it boils down to. This, because there was no consent going on in it. Now, I've not read the books. I'm not planning to. I'm not going to give them any money. I'm not going to give the author any money for writing this thing. I've not seen the movie, and I don't have any plans to. I'm not going to give the studios my money that is going to then see, okay, well, people are wanting this, so let's make more of this. I mean, this thing basically though, is showing that people doing this kind of thing is totally okay. That people who are subjecting someone else to this sort of sexual activity without their consent, without their being able to withdraw from it at any time, that's not okay. That is a rape situation. Now, the biggest issue that I have with this is that women are dragging their boyfriends and their husbands to this movie. And then you wonder why we have an issue with people that are out of control. I mean, you see it. It's at the same time that this 50 Shades of Grey business has been going on, we've had the opposite side of things going on where the feminists, especially the radical ones, have been going on about the rape culture and how, oh, just a guy looking at you is rape. And I kid you not, this is actually part of the radical feminist agenda, the well, for lack of better words, the feminazi agenda, that even a man looking at a woman is rape. That and I kid you not, this is a thing. I ran across this. This is a thing. And joke or not, people think this way, that a man farting louder than a woman is rape because she didn't, she's being oppressed by the man's loudness, essentially. Okay. And that's a thing. This actually is part of the feminist agenda. They're that stupid about it. Okay, so you have this situation where on the one hand, we have a group of people saying that even a man looking at a woman is rape, and then another set of, and apparently a large set of people, of women, going to see a movie like this where it is completely non-consensual and people are being hurt in big ways in a non-consensual kind of way. And you wonder why people are sitting here in the middle going, what the hell is going on here? I think, honestly, some of the reason why the 50 Shades thing has been as big as it is, besides the fact that it's being pushed forward as an agenda, which I'll get to here in a minute. But I think that a big part of the reason why it's been such a big hit with people is that it really does go against that radical feminist sort of thinking, and people are tired of hearing it. People are sick of hearing about the inequality that's going on, which there is. Okay, don't get me wrong, I'm not misogynistic here, okay? I'm not crying out that oh, well, women are oppressing men and all that kind of stuff. No. What I'm saying is that there's a point where it becomes too much, where it becomes overcompensating, where the pendulum has swung from one direction all the way over to the other direction, and it completely skipped the middle. Okay, that's what it comes down to. And I think that a lot of people are sort of doing this as a subconscious protest against the idea of this radical feminism and this everything that guys do is rape, rape, rape. That's all that you hear all over the place anymore. And again, don't get me wrong. I understand the situation with things. Rape exists and it's a horrific thing under all circumstances, no matter what it is. And it's never okay to do that kind of thing. Never, under any circumstances. But you see the people responding to the radical versions of this in this just as radical way, if that makes sense. I mean, to me, this piece of garbage should have been thrown in the trash for the dross that it really is. I mean, heck, it started out as a Twilight fan fiction. That alone should tell you that there's something not really right about it. I'm sorry, Twilight fans, but that's my own personal take on it. But you know, this whole thing is about an agenda. This whole thing is about this agenda of essentially making women more subservient again. It's making it so that people, when they take, let's take for instance the women taking their boyfriends to go see this movie, they're dragging them to it, and you got to go see this movie with me and blah blah blah. Well, then the boyfriends get there and they see that the woman enjoys this movie and that, you know, it's whatever. And that puts a subconscious thing in his mind to say, okay, well, I see that this is a not consensual situation that's going on the screen here. This person is pushing it beyond the bounds of consent. Okay. And that puts a subconscious thing in the brain that says, well, I can do this too. And since my girlfriend or my wife is sitting here enjoying this, apparently she's okay with this, and I can do this to her as well. Okay, let me put it to you this way. I mean, like I said, it sort of is an agenda that's going on to put the idea of women being subservient slaves to men into people's minds more than it ever has been before, and in a way that is becoming popularized. And so it's literally, it's programming women to think that this is the appropriate way to act, and guys to think that this is the appropriate thing to do. And again, you wonder again why we have the problem of the quote unquote rape culture here in our civilization. It's because of stuff like this. It's because of the idea that women have been getting to the point where they are becoming more empowered with things, that they are feeling a lot more equal. So now we have to put them back into their place again. If anything else, it is hyper misogynistic itself. Only it's under the guise of women's empowerment. You see, and again, it's all about the subconscious. It's all about the programming that's going on. It's a sick thing. It really is. And I'm so disappointed to see that it's become so popular, not just because I think that it's crap. I mean, what, Titanic was popular, and I think that movie is crap, and I'm probably going to get hollered at about that, but I do. I hate that movie. I hate everything about that movie, but it's a popular movie, and if people are going to enjoy it, then that's fine. But there was no message in there to say, oh, well, it's okay for guys to rape women. It's okay for guys to push women beyond their bounds, and when they say stop, to just keep going. How many times have us guys had it drilled into our damn heads that no means no? And you women are out there screaming and hollering, no means no, no means no. Okay, fine, we get it, but then don't drag us to a damn movie that says that no means yes, and to keep on pushing the frickin' limits. Talk about confusing people, right? Well, it's part of the agenda. It's there for a reason, and it's being done for a reason. Okay, so enough about that loveless subject, because, well, and again, I will say as well that I think that it's horribly disappointing as well that it happened on a day that people, you know, so many people were being dragged out there on Valentine's Day to go see this piece of crap movie. And that's supposedly the day that's dedicated to men romancing their women and to say, okay, well, I'm here to take care of you, and I'm here to give you gifts and shower you with love and affection and so on and so forth. Let's go watch this movie and watch women get beaten. And again, it sends a bad message, you know, it really does. So again, okay. So enough about that loveless subject, because it's, as a whole, it's doing more harm than good. You know, I wanted to talk to you guys about the subject of love. And again, the 50 Shades thing, it does enter with the subject of love, because people are thinking that this is what love is about. You see this woman on the screen who's, I'm loving him, and so on and so forth, and thinking that that's the right way to be, thinking that that's what love is. I mean, love is a really big topic. There are a lot of people out there that proclaim that love is all that we need to get through everything that we're going through. And that's the end all and be all of the subject. And it's the end all and be all of existence, essentially. And I don't disagree with that entirely, though there is a lot that's left out of the subject by just saying those words. In other words, it's kind of a very new agey way of thinking, and it does actually do a disservice to the subject. And you might be kind of looking at your radio like I'm nuts right now. But again, let me kind of speak my mind as far as this goes and see if you guys can understand where I'm coming from with a statement like that. Some people, especially the religious ones, they say that God is love, and that is the end all and be all of the subject. And they point to their scriptures, and they show how God in the scriptures says, well, I am love. I am the epitome of love. As a mother loves her child, I will love you even more. I will never let you go. I will never forget you. On and on and on. My, you know, I'm merciful and kind and loving and compassionate and so on and so forth. They'll point to their scriptures and they'll say, this is it, right? But the problem is with that kind of a situation, the dichotomy with it, the duality with it, I guess you could say, is confusing to the subject of love, because you have in the Bible, for instance, just taking that because I know that one the best, but I know that this is the same in the Quran and the Gita and on and on and on. Okay, so in the Christian scriptures, for instance, again, it talks about how God is the epitome of love. This is what love is supposed to be. But then you have God then saying, well, go and kill these people and destroy these people and throw these babies against the rocks and on and on and on. It's a dichotomy there, right? It's a split in the mind, basically. And again, it becomes a subconscious thing to people when they see that, well, God says that he's love and then he commands this, so that must be part of love then as well, right? And I've heard a lot of Christian apologists, for instance, say things along those lines. And that is, to me, a really big problem, to say the least. Because you can't justify that kind of actions and still say that it was done out of love. There's just no way. People talk about the love that a mother or father have for their children and how that is a perfect type of love. But then behind the scenes, there is so much darkness that's going on that the child that's involved in it, for instance, will come away from the situation damaged. I mean, it's even to the point of the parent rejecting the child for the child not doing everything that the parent commands them to do, or not being everything that the parent wants them to be. I have seen that time and time again in my life, that a parent will abandon their child, essentially. Even, and of course, older children, right? But still abandoning them, not wanting to have anything to do with them just because they're different, or just because they didn't go to college the way that they wanted them to, or they're not in the job that they wanted them to have, and so on and so forth. I mean, it's out there. So the parents say, "I love you," and then they beat their kids, or they say, "I love you," and then they do other things that cause them harm. What does that teach the child about love? I mean, so many people think that they know love and that they understand love, but in reality, they really don't. I mean, I bet if you look in your life, you're going to see friends or family that talk about how much they love someone, and yet they end up mistreating them. They hurt them, or they put restrictions on them, and all of that kind of stuff. Is that really love? Is that what love is all about? I mean, when it comes to love, most people honestly just pay lip service to the idea of it. They don't really understand what love really is or what it's about. I mean, again, think about the cult of love that's out there. There are people that just talk that what we need is love. And that's all we need. And sure, that's a great way to think, but are they really doing anything about it? I mean, I see so many of the people that say that phrase actually being the very ones that cause a lot of issues with people. They're judgmental, and they'll do whatever they can to actually harm people. It's really a sad state of affairs, because when people say that they know and understand love, but they really don't, it causes a lot of damage. It causes more harm than good, essentially. It causes a lot more problems than what you would really realize. So many people out there are seeking love. They're coming from places that they were without love, and they've lacked it in their lives, and they're deeply impacted because of that lack of love. And because of that, they don't really understand it or recognize it when it actually is there. Others people have come from backgrounds that are really horrible. I mean, people told them that they were loved, but then they abused them. They would destroy that emotion and that bond that would be formed between the people. I mean, I used to be that way. I heard people tell me that they loved me, and then they abused me. I heard firsthand people paying lip service to the idea of love, but in reality, they really had no idea what it was about. It's hurtful. It's a hurtful situation, because when people don't know what love is, they will find themselves getting into more and more trouble. They will seek out what they think is love, and they will put themselves into situations over and over again that are very dangerous, that are very bad for them, that are hurtful to them. And it keeps reinforcing things. Remember, not long ago, I talked to you guys about emotional addictions. And in that, I talked about the patterns that people would fall into in relationship after relationship, by becoming addicted to these different emotions. And the search for love is the same. It actually is an emotional addiction, only it's an addiction to a lack of emotion, and it's an addiction to a seeking of emotion. So you go out and you'll search for what you have come to understand as being love, and you end up in a situation that turns out to be the opposite of it. And yet at first, when you first get with them or whatever, you feel, I'm in love. This is a great thing. I feel like I'm deeply in love and everything is wonderful and we can move forward and enjoy our lives together and all that kind of stuff. Well, with love, with true love. Now, when I'm saying true love, let me clarify. I'm not meaning, you know, true love. This is the love that people feel when they're in a relationship together and all that kind of stuff. No, what I'm meaning is just the truth of love, the true love emotion, right? The love emotion that is real, as opposed to the pseudo love, which I'll get to here in a little while. But true love is, well, it's coming from the understanding that there is no buts with love. In a true love situation, it's unconditional. Most people, when they think of love or they feel love, they're not actually feeling the true love emotion. They will attach conditions to it. So they'll say things like, I love you, but you need to change your hair. I love you, but you need to stop acting this way. I love you, but I can't handle the fact that you like Lady Gaga. Okay, whatever. I mean, there's always going to be conditions that are attached to their idea of love. So when a person attaches those conditions, when there are buts with love or ifs with love, that's not love. That's a different emotion. It may have the taint of love or the idea of love, the flavor of it, or however you want to put it, that it may be that, but it's not actually true, unconditional, 100% loving someone else, because love doesn't have conditions to it. You either love someone or you don't. It's either on or off, essentially, right? And there are degrees of it, yes, but there are never any conditions that are there with it. A lot of people, like I said, they confuse feelings of love with other things. And a lot of times things like jealousy can feel like love. Jealousy actually is a big one, because jealousy and love, they can be akin to each other. You can feel like you love someone, but then you feel like you own them. And that's one thing that jealousy stems from. Jealousy always stems from the idea or the thought in the mind that you own this other person, or you own this other object, or whatever it is that you're coveting, that whatever it is that you're desiring out of your jealousy. And you feel like you're going to lose it, or feel like you cannot attain it. That is jealousy. It feels similar to people's idea of love, but it actually is not love. A lot of people also equate sex with love, and that kind of gets again back into the 50 Shades of Grey thing, which I'll touch on here in just a moment as well. But the chemical reactions that happen in the body when you have intercourse with somebody, basically it creates a bond between the two people. So even if it's a one night stand, you're going to have a chemical bond with this other person. And that chemical bond can go bad or good, right? It just depends. But that bond only lasts a little while. So that oxytocin in your system when you're falling in love and so on and so forth, when you're going through all of that, the chemicals are going through your brain and it's laying out the tracks and the pathway to the emotion of love. Well, that actually comes about as well for a lot of people through intercourse. And so you will end up equating sex with love because you really do feel the quote unquote love emotion with this other person after you've had sex. So one thing that I wanted to say just as a sideline to this is the whole fact that 50 Shades started to go on as far as on Valentine's Day was concerned, which is supposed to be this holiday that is all about love, all about, you know, being together and so on and so forth. And these people took their dates to go to it and basically said, if you really love me, you'd abuse me. Prove you love me by taking me to this basically porno and we can do this later on. I mean, hell, guys, Target is selling 50 Shades of Grey paraphernalia on their end caps. I mean, I saw that a laundry detergent has a 50 Shades of Grey ad on it. It's insanity. Anyways, I had to toss that out there real quick because we actually need to take a quick break here. I wanted to leave you on kind of a joking note with all of this. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the deeper subjects of love, what it's all about, what it means, and maybe how to, well, things that we can do basically to improve the situation and to try to come to an understanding of it. And I hope that you guys are enjoying this so far. I'm enjoying having the conversation about it myself. So hopefully you guys are getting a little bit out of it. Anyways, stick around with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes after these messages.
The L&M Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information and subscribe today. Information on becoming an L&M subscriber can be found at the top of LateNightInTheMidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of LateNightInTheMidlands.com and help us help you.
Open Eyes is dedicated to finding the truth in all matters. We are not afraid to be politically incorrect or to ask questions. Whether it is the paranormal, government cover-ups, the dark agenda that the puppet masters have in store for us, or aliens and UFOs, nothing remains hidden. Listen to Open Eyes, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on LateNightInTheMidlands.com or OpenEyesNetwork.com. Open hearts, open minds, open eyes.
Robert Nozick developed something called The Tale of the Slave. It's very brief, goes through 9 quick stages. Nozick invites you to imagine yourself as the slave in the story. Stage 1 is that you are indeed a slave subject to a brutal master who forces you to work for him and who beats you arbitrarily. In the second stage, the master lightens up a bit, and he beats you only for breaking the rules, and he even grants you some free time. In the third stage, we add the additional dimension that you are one of a group of slaves subject to this master. And this master, based on principles that are acceptable to all of you, decides how goods will be allocated among you. In the fourth stage, you even get some time off. You have to work for the master for only 3 days per week. The other 4 days are your own. In stage five, you even get to work wherever you want, but you have to remit to the master 3/7 of your wages to correspond to the 3 days out of seven that you once worked for him. He also retains the right to recall you into service in emergencies and to increase at any time the fraction of your wages to which he lays claim. Then, in stage six, everyone, all, let's say, 10,000 slaves, except you, are granted the right to vote. So they get to decide what is allowed and what is not allowed. They get to decide what fraction of your wages will be taken away and what outlets the money will be spent on. In stage seven, you still don't have the right to vote, but you are allowed to try to persuade those who can vote to exercise their powers in a particular way. In stage eight, you are granted the right to vote, but only to break a tie. You write down your vote, and if a tie should occur, your vote is opened up and recorded. No tie has ever occurred. Finally, in stage nine, you are fully granted the right to vote. But this simply means, functionally, that as in stage eight, in case of a tie, your vote carries the issue. But there has never been a tie. Nozick's question is this: at what stage between 1 and 9 did this become something other than the tale of a slave? That's the kind of mind-blowing question that makes you rethink everything you've been taught about taxation and society, government. It's the kind of thing that makes you skeptical of government propaganda from that moment on. And that's precisely why Nozick's question is never asked.
Thank you.
welcome back to Open Eyes. Man, I love that song. I love any music that's along those lines because, man, it really does. It sends my spirit soaring. It really does. I don't know about you guys, but that kind of stuff just really, it pushes my buttons in a big way. If you guys have any music that you'd like to send to me, by the way, that song was Human Legacy by Ivan Torrent, and I love that song. It's one of my favorite songs ever. If you guys have any music that you would like to send me that I could use on my show, please send it to me. My email address is feedback@openeyesnetwork.com, and I'd be more than glad to use any of it on my show, as long as it's, you know, theme appropriate, I guess you could say. It's not all, crazy, full of cuss words and all that kind of stuff. If it's decent, I'll use it. That's what it comes down to. Anyways, so welcome back. I hope that you guys have been enjoying the topic tonight. The subject of love is a big one to me, and I try to push it a lot because, well, it does come down to the idea that love is what matters in the end. It's just a fact that so many people don't understand what love really is, right? So hopefully you guys are getting a little bit of information tonight that will help you in the future, I guess you could say. Anyways, with all of this stuff comes the idea of forgiveness. Forgiveness lays the path for love in the end. That's sort of what it's meant for. And I know if you've listened to my show at any point in time, you've probably heard me talk about this topic. So pardon me if I talk about it again, because we do get new listeners all the time, which, hello, welcome, thank you. But the idea with forgiveness is that essentially it's not about you. It's never about the other person. It's always about you. You are the ultimate target for forgiveness. It's about cleansing yourself of the darknesses that the other person that has hurt you has laid on you. You can't carry that stuff with you all the time and not expect that the world is going to be viewed through it. We are always looking through the lenses of all of our experiences, good and bad. And if we are still holding on to the negative emotions from those previous encounters in our life, then those negative emotions are going to color or taint the things that you experience here and now. So even listening to my voice right now, you're listening to it through the filter of everything that you've gone through before this moment in time. That includes any kind of hurts that you've had and any kind of good experiences that you've had. And a lot of times I never really talk about this part of it, but I do want to mention this, that a lot of times you will judge other people based on what you have gone through. So if I'm saying something, for instance, here that you are rejecting because of the hurts that you've gone through, then that means right there that your present was modified by the taint of that previous experience. Does that make sense to you? So forgiveness is meant as a way to get those hurts away from you and just basically now associate the memory of what you went through with just the fact that it was an experience, as opposed to looking at it with the emotion. So forgiveness is not forgetting. And a lot of people always try to equate the two together, and it really is not about forgetting. Just because you forgive someone doesn't mean that you forget what you went through. It just means that you're not harboring or holding on to the negative things that were there with it, and you're not letting them impact you here and now. That's what it's all about. So forgiveness is never about the other person. It's always about yourself and what you can do to progress forward from this point in time into the future. Incorporate those experiences into your life because those are important. They're what makes you you. But you don't also have to live in the negativity that those experiences caused. I give the example of with myself with this. I'd never talk to people about things that are like this without them being things that I have gone through myself. So everything that I always talk to you guys with all of this stuff is done through the light of my own personal experiences. Why? Because that's where I come from and that's where I understand it the best. So I give myself as the example with it because I don't want to say that I'm a shining beacon for it or anything like that because I still deal with everything. But in my own life, what I look at is that I've gone through a lot of negative experiences. I've gone through a lot of dark things in my days. I've been abused. I've been on every side of every fence, essentially. I mean, it's like I always talk to my wife about this stuff, and when I'm talking to her about it, I tell her that the reason why I went through everything and why I did everything that I did as in my youth and that sort of thing. I mean, I've had experiences with drug use. I've had experiences with teenage pregnancy. I've had experiences with people's suicides and, you know, tried to do it myself when I was younger and all, I mean, the gamut of everything that you could possibly go through, I've basically been through at one point or another. And the reason why I think that I went through it is so that I could experience the stuff and be able to talk to my children about these things from a firsthand sort of way so that they could come to me with anything that they've gone through in their lives and know that I'll have an understanding of things because I've been through it myself. And I'm not going to judge them because I can't judge them for what they go through, because I've been there myself. I've done it myself, or I've lived through that kind of stuff myself. But again, I don't have to carry the negative emotions with it. So I do this practicing of forgiveness because I don't regret anything that I've gone through. I don't hold on to any of the resentments of my past, because if I did, then that would mean that I don't appreciate the good things that I have right now as much. So that's the basis of where I come from with this idea of forgiveness and practicing forgiveness, is because when you hold on to those resentments, when you're looking at the world through that negative is you're not accepting the good things that you're going through right now either. You see, because you're still being colored or tainted by that negative. It's sort of like you the idea of you can't love and hate someone at the same time, because the two are at dichotomy with each other. They're at odds with each other. They can't exist together in the same moment. A positive and a negative can't exist in the same moment together. So it's along those lines. It's that idea. If I was still carrying that, I would not be appreciative of what I have here and now. So that's the idea with forgiveness. And I bring that to you guys because the idea with true love is that it's not something that's instant and it's not something that's immediate. It is built over time, at least in my experience of things. It's not something that you're always going to have, you know, boom, you're now in love and that sort of thing. It's not always a love at first sight kind of a deal. You do have to build up to that love. And that forgiveness stuff is part of it. You can't love someone and still hold on to things that are in the past with them. You can't love, for instance, your husband while at the same time hating aspects of him, because you either love him or you don't. It's not it really kind of is this idea of all or nothing with it, because they can't exist together. The two things can't exist together. So again, like I said earlier, love is unconditional. It has no buts with it. There's no, I love you, but you need to change. Well, if you change the person, or if the person changes, then they're no longer the person that you say that you love. So it's, you see what I mean? It's, you can't change someone or want them to change and still claim that you love them. You don't love them. You love the idea of what they could be. And there's a difference between the two. They're not the same thing. The one is love, but the other one is the idea of love. They're two completely different things, guys. So I want to make sure to have that clear. You can't change someone or expect them to change or want them to change and still say that you love them. You're either loving them where they are right now with all of the goods and bads that they have, or you don't. I actually, a funny story, not really funny, but it does fit. It's when my dear friend got married the first time, his to-be wife told me about an hour before the wedding ceremony that she loved him, but that she loved what he could become. She knew that he would, that she would be able to change him after they're married. And then she would be in love with him. But that what she was marrying was the potential. And that's a sad state of affairs. I've seen that happen more than once, right? And I bet you if you guys have looked in your life, you'll see that kind of thing has happened in your life as well, either personally or to someone that you know. And that's really sad. It really is to me. So one thing that is a truth is that there really are dualities with all of this. We do have to go through darkness to understand what light is. We have to understand evil in order to understand good. And we have to, well, we have to go through hard times to appreciate the better times. It's that way with love. We have to know the opposites in order to know and appreciate the goods, essentially. So there really is kind of a duality or a dual aspect to all of this. That's kind of where the forgiveness idea comes in. You can go through troubled times, for instance, forgive someone and move forward into a more loving type of a situation or a more loving emotion, basically. So the reason why I bring all this stuff up, especially in relation to the cult of love, is because of some of the things that I've seen where they're using mass forms of propaganda to get people completely lost on what love really is. And it's like you see it a lot a good example is Cosmo, you know, Cosmopolitan magazine. They have all these tests that they do. And does he really love you? Does he really love you? What can you do to make him fall in love with you more? And so on and so forth. And that really is a form of propaganda that confuses people on the idea of true love. And it really does bother me a lot because I think that this world would be a lot better place if people really knew what love really is. You take the idea of people then saying that love is all that there is, that we're all one in love and so on. And you have a situation where people then are so out of their minds in confusion with it all that they ignore it. You know, they'll say things like, I've been hurt before and I want nothing to do with love. Well, people have got to understand love before they can start actually proclaiming that that is all that we need. To do otherwise means that you're putting people into a situation that they have no idea what they're doing. It hurts the cause more than it helps it. So it really is New Age gobbledygook. Seriously, that's what it comes down to. I think that it really is done intentionally. Again, the fact is that, yes, love, true love, is in the end what is going to get us through everything. It's about understanding that the person that is beside you is just as much you as you are them, and that what you do affects them at a deep level. It's about knowing that everything that we do is poured out of us in waves. I mean, what you send out to other people comes back to you just as much. Your life is sort of like a piano string. I liken it to a piano string. So say, for instance, you take a look on the inside of a piano and you see all the strings that are lined up there in front of you. And when one of those strings gets plucked, the vibration of it goes forward to the end of the piano, bounces off the wood, and comes back to its originating point. And it goes back and forth and back and forth. And that vibration is what makes the tone that you hear after the key is pressed. Well, also at the same time that you pluck that string and it starts its vibrations, all the other strings that are around it and surrounding it start vibrating as well. You never touched them, but they start vibrating in sympathy with the string that was plucked. It causes them to vibrate in the end almost as much as it did, you know, when you first plucked the string on the piano. Same thing with a guitar, whatever, you know, just use whatever analogy you want, but get the idea that what you did to that string there caused a sympathetic vibration to occur in everything that was around it. And we do the same things. Think about it. We're vibration, we're energy. That's what it comes down to. That's what we are. You've heard me speak about that before. And the fact is that when it comes to what you put out, it goes out of you as a vibration, as an energy, you know, a frequency that comes off of you. And anybody that's around you, anybody that you're interacting with or looking at or anything along those lines, they start vibrating in sympathetic retaliation with you. So if you're putting out a good vibe, quote unquote, then they're going to feel a good vibe as well. It's a sympathetic reaction that happens. That's why, that's what love in the end means. It's about knowing that you are them, that they are you, and that we are all part of this cosmic experiment that's been ongoing and will go on. But we're not taught that from the get-go, are we? I mean, we're told something else entirely. We're told that you should have love like those other couples that are out there, even though half of all marriages end in divorce and families are devastated. We're not taught love. Instead, we're taught division. We're taught that we have to look out for number one, that we have to think just of ourselves first, that the guy who's homeless and sitting there starving is faking it and is only after booze or drugs. We're taught that kids should be programmed, that they need to learn young the harshness of the world. I've heard that so many times that parents will intentionally harm their children so that their children can know what hurt is so that they can avoid it in the future. Well, they just taught their child how to hurt. That's all that they did. They just taught their child how to hurt, not how to avoid it. And a lot of times the child then will seek out the hurts later in life because they don't know any better. They don't know that this is not something that you're supposed to feel. They seek it out because they immediately become addicted to it, you know? I mean, look at a group of little children that are together, you know, really small ones. Look at how they act together. They don't hate. They don't try to kill each other. They're basically in a state of innocence and love. I mean, that is a state of love. True love has no agendas other than to proliferate itself, basically. It has no needs other than to express itself. If you're a part of the culture of love, and you really want to get people to understand the idea that we really are one and that we're all connected together, then stop just saying the words. Teach them what love is and show them what love is. Don't preach love and then cause divisions. I've seen this in the New Age groups that are out there a lot. That a lot of these New Age people, the ones who are really popular, for instance, because, you know, there are a lot of them that are out there that are very popular. They're going on the circuits. They're on the TV shows. They're big on Facebook and big on their little podcasts that they do and all of that kind of stuff. They have these big followings of people. Sometimes hundreds of thousands or millions of people will follow these love gurus who are out there, essentially. And the people that are doing these things, that are out there teaching these things, they might say the words, well, you need to love everyone. Everyone is one. Everyone is together, and we're all in this together, and we need to show love and be love and all and on and on and on. But then when you look at what they do in their private lives, you'll see that they are always out trolling people, or that they're out fighting with other people, that they're essentially, they are divided just as much as everybody else is. They preach love, but they don't act love. They talk love, but they don't show love. If someone is out there preaching that love is all that there is, and then they do nothing to actually reinforce love in other people by the words that they say and by the actions that they do, which are actually more important than the words, then what does that show their followers? It shows them that dichotomy. It shows them that division. And it shows them that on a subconscious level, that they're taught that this is what love then is supposed to be about. And that's how these new breeds of people, basically, these new waves of people come out into these New Age forums and Facebook and on and on and on, saying, well, I love everyone except for you and you and you and you. You guys I don't love. Well, if you say that love is all that there is, and that love is everything, and that we should love all people, then that means that you should love all people, that love is everything, and that's it. Period. Point blank. It's as simple as that, right? If you think about it, it makes perfect sense. You have to teach how to love from the get-go. You have to teach your children how to love. They come into the world in a blank slate state, right? You have to show them what love is, and you have to teach them what love is. By doing it in the ways that are forgiveness based, that are togetherness based. Because if you don't teach your children love, they're going to learn other lessons. They're going to learn other ways of living. And in those waters, be dragons. So, guys, I am unfortunately, once again, out of time. I hate to be. This subject is one that I think is really important for people to hear. And hopefully you guys have come away from this episode with a little bit more knowledge than what you walked into it with, and hopefully more inspiration. You know, hopefully I inspired you guys to walk forward and say, hey, I now understand a little bit better about what love is or what it could be or anything along those lines. If that happens, I'm grateful. If you want to send me an email about anything, you can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. I love hearing from all of you guys. If you want to go to the show notes for this show, which I'll have the links to all of the stories that I had here and all of that kind of good stuff, you can go to openeyesnetwork.com/OE074. On Facebook and Twitter, my pages there are Open Eyes Network, and you can also find me at Ira Robinson on both of those. Be sure to stick around. Michael Vera is going to bring you Late Night in the Midlands in just a few minutes. And on Monday, I'm not sure what the topic is going to be yet. I think I might have Joe Long on again as a guest. I'm not sure yet. We don't have the plans directly laid out yet, but I'll let you know over the weekend how things are going to be. And guys, until next time, keep safe out there and have fun. And thank you so much for listening. Again, tune in on Monday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, latenightinthemidlands.com.